Welcome to The Talkies, a weekly film podcast with me, Lucy Smith.
And me, Michael Henry.
This week we'll be discussing dialogue.
Yes. And unironically, you and I will be having a dialogue.
Yeah. I just want to say one thing before we start talking about what we're actually meant to be talking about.
Go for it.
Our films have a crazy connection. Stan Grossman. So, you know, Stan Grossman is a character in Fargo. And then Stan Grossman is the guy that the dad in Little Miss Sunshine is trying to get money from. And I found out that the writer of Little Miss Sunshine did that as like a tribute to Fargo.
I'd never knew that.
Yeah.
Who's Stan Grossman in Fargo then?
So he's the guy that, is it Wade?
The
main guy's trying to get this big deal from. And, he keeps saying to his son, Stan Grossman called and stuff.
Yeah.
So he's like this beacon of opportunism, as the writer of Little Miss Sunshine said. But yeah, I thought it was really weird that we've both chosen films that had that link.
Well, especially a link that I didn't know about, too. Like, I kind of pride myself on knowing this stuff. So well done. That's impressive.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you want to start with your pick for this week?
Yeah, sure. This is a very beloved film of many people. But I started watching it when I was little, and I love it. It's Little Miss Sunshine, and the premise is that little girl from quite a dysfunctional, hilarious family wants to enter a beauty contest, and she gets in out from someone like dropping out, and her granddad is training her. And the whole film is basically they're on this big road trip because they all have to go together in this little van. Things go from bad to worse, and it all ends with an unexpected show from her at the beauty pageant. And it's just a lovely film about, I don't know, what do you do when everything goes wrong?
Just accepting the weird stuff of family, I guess.
Yeah. But what I love about the dialogue in this film, I think it's so cleverly written. First of all, it makes me laugh. There's always a bit that I remember that's sort of like, what is it? The dad sort of says, I can detect that hint of sarcasm, Frank. And Frank's like, you can? Really? And he's like, yes, and sarcasm is the refuge of losers. And he's like, it is?
Yeah. I think you're talking about my favourite character. You're talking about the grandfather.
No, this is between the dad and Uncle Frank.
Oh, no, it's between Steve Carell's character, yeah.
Yeah, but the granddad's
amazing. My favourite character's always been... some of his lines are amazing. And also, like, we'll explain why it's good dialogue as well afterwards, but him going, him screaming like, I still got Nazi bullets in my ass, stuff like that. It says so much about the character.
Yeah.
But it's just every line he has. For me, I don't want to spoil anything for anyone who's not seen it, but once he's less a part of the film about halfway through, for me, it loses a lot of what was great about it. Like, I still really like the film.
Okay.
But I feel like it loses something once he's no longer a huge part of the film.
I think it had to happen.
Oh, it has to happen.
But no, I know what you mean. But he's interesting. It made me think of how dialogue with some people. Like, he shouts his, in quotes, wisdom to the world and doesn't listen to anyone. Like, it's a one-way street.
I think that's a very... I want to say a very grandparent thing to do, because my grandparents aren't like that, but it's a very common thing amongst old people. Like, you're kind of not given the platform as much as when you were younger to speak your mind, I guess. So when you can, you kind of scream it at people, and you can't understand why people don't think what you think. Anyway, it's got nothing to do with dialogue, so I apologise.
It does, in a way, because, like, good dialogue should reveal the character. It shouldn't just move the plot
along. I was going to ask, like, what... Because, you know, in terms of writing, you're more the written word than films. Mm. And I'm not offending you by saying that.
No.
So what do you think good dialogue is? What do you expect from good dialogue?
I can't pinpoint it that very well, but I know when it's happening. Like, there's a bit in Fargo, your pick, where it's near the start. Sorry. But we had talked about it at the start.
Yeah,
and they're talking, and you can't quite follow what they're saying until, like, the root of what they're talking about is dropped. I think there's a line by Steve Buscemi that's like, so you want to kidnap your own wife. And that's what they've been talking about for the first few minutes, but you didn't need to know. And it's, I don't know, it's just cleverly done. It's done naturally, but also you can't do dialogue too naturally because that would be boring. So it's like that fine line.
I agree with that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think people kind of, especially like post-Tarantino, everyone's kind of become obsessed with the idea of dialogue is the thing. Not everyone, but there was a huge trend of people being obsessed with the idea that dialogue's like the thing to focus on and try to make it realistic. It's not really realistic, because when you think about it, most people talk in a way that doesn't reveal anything. Mm. Most people talk too much. I feel like right now I'm being too expository. I wanted to ask, so with Little Miss Sunshine, what is it about the dialogue in that you really think makes it stand out?
I think everyone talks their own way. If you removed the sound of their voice and just put their words on a page without saying the name attached to it, you'd know who's talking. It's like every character.
A sense of character.
Yeah, yeah. And then they clash them so well. That's what they do. Like, a lot of places, everyone's like talking over each other or like rebutting and stuff. And that's where everything happens. Like,
yeah.
What interested me as well is that there's a lot of, in both our films, there's a lot of like smooth talking. Like with Wade and the dad in Little Miss Sunshine, I keep forgetting his name. They both have this like, you know, this smooth talking, oh, it's all going to be fine because, and you know, selling.
Well,
and
it's, yeah, they're full of bullshit, basically.
Yeah.
Like they're kind of con artists without being too
exactly
horrible about it.
And there's
like,
so
they're
much.
They're never honest.
There's so much bullshit going on everywhere. And what I love in Little Miss Sunshine is Olive cutting through that, especially when she meets Frank, her uncle Frank, for the first time. And, you know, he tried to commit suicide over sort of losing some guy that he was in love with. And, you know, she just cuts straight to the questions. And, yeah, I think she's a great thing in there to sort of expose everyone else. And so is Dwayne, who has taken a vow of silence. Like,
well, that's why I thought this was a very good pick for this week, was because, I mean, there's some great characters in there, but his character in particular, so Paul Dano's character, who's, like you say, has taken a vow of silence, that was the character that really fascinated me when I was about 16 when I watched it. And when he eventually like has not a breakdown, but he starts to like scream about something, that kills me every time. Like every time I watch it, I have to message a friend who I saw it with. I'm like, I'll just watch this again, that scene kills me. Like he'd built so much, his dreams were kind of built on the idea of this thing that was going to happen, and once it's taken away, that's what breaks his vow of silence. And yeah, that's one of my favourite scenes.
I've had weird reactions to that. The first time I ever watched it, I laughed so much. I don't know why. And then...
Really?
And then it makes me cry now. I think it's, you know, him trying to get out of the van and pushing at everything and sort of rattling the seat. I don't know. But I love that his first word in 9 months is, fuck!
Yeah. And also, he's similar to what you talked about with Olive, that he's a very earnest character and says what he...
Yeah.
Says what he thinks in some ways. I mean, a lot of it's written down, but when he says, I hate you fucking people, that is really hard to watch, because he's just, you know, the people you're not supposed to say this stuff to is family.
Yeah.
He just turns around and says, like, I don't want to be part of this. Like, he just breaks down what's wrong with all, like, bankruptcy, divorce, I can't remember the
suicide.
Others.
Suicide, yeah.
So, yeah, suicide, and, yeah, he just goes there.
There's so
which
much
isn't
more...
technically... Sorry, go on.
I was just going to say, there's so much more weight to it as well, because he hasn't spoken for 9 months, and when he does, it's these insults which just feel a little bit more true because they know he's just been watching them.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, technically, it's kind of bad dialogue. Like, I think, in my opinion, bad dialogue is, I'm angry now, or you are this. Mm. But that works really well because he hasn't said anything, and it's almost like this pressure cooker of all the things he's been thinking and feeling but never actually sharing.
Yeah. I mean, he does then get to the top of the hill and say, I'm sorry for what I said. So, like, I like that he just says what's on his... A lot of... Like, the granddad says what's on his mind, you know, it just no filter.
That's why he's my favourite character, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, like, do you think... Obviously, thinking about dialogue, we start thinking about how we speak and how we pause and how sentences don't always go somewhere. I mean, especially for me, I'm all over the map. But, yeah, I was going to ask, do you feel that you're someone who always says what they're thinking, or if it's hidden behind some, or if there's more subtext?
Yeah.
I don't think I worded that very well.
I get
well.
You, though, and there's so much, in real life and in film, well, if films are done well as well, there's like a lot of subtext and not quite saying what you mean, but getting the same effect. I definitely did that more when I wasn't as confident in myself, I guess. I do hold my tongue and I probably overthink sometimes and think, well, what are the consequences here? Okay, I'll just shut up. Like, However, with people I really care about, it's always worth it to say exactly what I feel as soon as it comes up. Because things get worse and worse if you leave him. And yeah, I think I say it very tactfully. But usually that sinks in better, you know? I don't know.
No, definitely. I'd say you're one of the few people I know who do it in a way that isn't combative, if that makes sense. Even like we were talking about an email that you sent on our behalf. I won't say where or anything, but even with that, it was like, oh, what did I? Was I a bit too harsh? I'm like, no.
I do worry.
You walked the line perfectly.
Okay, good.
It's not bad. I think it's a bad trait. I mean, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I would say I was a bullshit artist completely. Now I try to be as direct and to the point, mostly because I just, you know, we talked about this earlier today that just I hate wasting time. Just get to the point. Like, if you like someone, say it. If you're in a bad mood, just be honest about it. Don't try and this isn't
usually
that'll make
the bad mood pass as well. Like it's a win-win.
Yeah, I mean, I don't always live by this. I don't think it's entirely true. But I do think around the age of like 23 to 28, it was a lot more like, I don't know, I have a lot more suspicion about people who speak with confidence about something that they are adamant that something is one thing, or they're adamant that they are this thing. I don't know, I'm not wearing that.
No,
very
I
long,
agree
but,
I think that means they've stopped thinking, because
well, just that level of belief is a bit disturbing to me.
I was just gonna say, going off this idea of bad dialogue being explaining your feelings but turned to good dialogue in the right hands, I think Fargo has that as well, because there's like this moment where Steve Buscemi driving in the car, it's a bit like the granddad talking at Dwayne. It's like you're hitting a wall, and I think it reveals a lot about a character when they only can talk to themselves when they're trying to get through to someone.
Yeah.
But Steve Buscemi's driving the car and he's saying, I'm feeling mad because you're not talking to me. That's not the words, but you know, he's basically explaining exactly how he feels, and he's like, "Well, why can't I get any words out of you?" And yeah, on the page that wouldn't look that great. It's like, I'm feeling angry because of this, but
I think it works because it's all about revealing character. And what you've just said, it's because the other person isn't talking or they're reluctant to. I think he says like, I don't know if it's the same scene, but it's like, "Where is Pancake's house?" And that's the only thing he says for about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like he's so used to not saying something that it frustrates the other person. I feel like, yeah, you can get away with that stuff because of there being some sort of disparity between the two people. I was going to say, because you just brought up like bad dialogue, what do you think bad dialogue is? Because I have a very succinct, not answer, but like version of this that when I teach it. So what would you say is bad? What would you say is bad dialogue?
I notice it being bad when it's exactly what I know they're going to say right at that moment, like a big old cliche, or you could already see it coming. It's like, they're not a character, they're just literally this tunnel of, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with the tunnel thing. But
I like the idea of a tunnel. It's a tunnel.
You can follow it very easy and there's nothing in there.
Well, it's a tunnel of thought from the writer to the audience. Like if you can see the puppet strings, it's never quite as impressive, I think.
Yeah, why should I watch if I know exactly what they're going to say all the time? Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you teach in class?
There's a very specific example. It's from a film that I don't even know the name to, but that's how bad it is, where... So basically, dialogue should be reactive to what the visuals are. And there's an example of a film, I want to say it's like the 30s or 40s, of a group of people, and the shot is them looking at something and pointing, going, "Look, Highland cattle." And then it cuts to some Highland cattle. And it's like, great, you've told me something that, like, what was the point of that? Whereas I think in both of our picks, I do have some minor gripes with parts of Little Miss Sunshine towards the end, but we'll come back to that. I do think both of us have yours in particular, I think the opening third of that is some of my favourite overlapping dialogue.
Yeah.
Especially when they're sat around the dinner table. Like, everyone gets a word in, except for the silent character. Everyone gets a word in. And it reveals so much about the character. It reveals the dynamic between all of them. And it's done quite quickly. It's done in about 3 to 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And you get everything you need to know. It's like, okay, that person's like that. That person used to be like that. You know, this person wants to control this. This person's biting their tongue. So that's why it's good dialogue. Whereas bad dialogue is very much... There's a film called Troll 2 as well, which the title probably gives away it's not a good film. And there's a bit where someone's looking at these monsters eating someone. And he goes, "Oh my god, they're eating her, and they're going to eat me! Oh my god, no!" And it says all of this, and it's all in this one person's reaction. You don't need any of that dialogue.
No,
like an audience is not stupid enough to not get what's going on there.
That sort of links to something I was going to ask. Like, can good actors turn bad dialogue good?
I think so. Yeah, it depends how bad it is. I mean, if you watch Star Wars, Star Wars is a very good example of some of the actors not revolting, but kind of turning back, turning on the people who wrote it and directed it, and said, "You can write this shit, but you can't say it." Like, there's a lot of sci-fi, or a lot of things where the specifics that you're trying to reveal the story, or we're going to this planet, for instance. There's some words that people just can't say, and it's something that I used to take for granted, but I don't anymore. That when I'm making my own stuff, like at the moment we're currently in the rehearsals for Mother Sky, and from the actors, I'm adjusting parts of the dialogue based on what they're bringing to it, but also knowing, when they try to, even an audition stage, when they try to do this bit, it didn't work. And why didn't it work?
Do you mean some words together are really hard to get out, or?
Yeah, the order of words. Mm. Also, if they're saying, you know, what we've said, like saying stuff a bit too overtly. Yeah. Also the rhythm of stuff. Like if it's someone talking for a minute, it's very rare that it's good. If there's a monologue, it's not very cinematic. I mean, we talked about Godfather recently. Mm. The opening of that is someone talking for about 2 minutes, but it works because you're holding, because of the direction and because of the quality of the acting, it works.
Yeah.
But you watch most, if someone's talking for 2 minutes in a film, one person, it's normally not very good, which might be, you know, it might be a good segue into some of the things I wanted to mention this week in terms of other films, like Hunger, I can't stop talking about, but that film does it so well. That would be another perfect pick for this week, where there's no dialogue. So when we were talking about picking films for dialogue this week, we talked about, you seem to pick quite easily with this, whereas I struggled a bit, because yours is a great example of overlapping dialogue and revealing character, whereas I wanted to pick something that pointed out the fact that dialogue's kind of the enemy of cinema in some ways. It's a visual medium. You should be telling your audience stuff through the images and the interaction of cuts.
Yeah, but I think it adds to it. So, like, subtext in dialogue adds to stuff if it's done right. Like, because you can see something, but what they're saying is completely different. Like, that's when it works. But otherwise, I'd agree. Like, visual, show, don't tell.
Like, I think both of our picks do this, but I think Fargo in particular, the more I watch it, the more I appreciate it. The more I watch it, the more I appreciate the dialogue and the way... So the Coen brothers created Fargo. I mean, that's no mystery to anyone who's ever watched a film and likes films. But the Coen brothers are amazing at having a really good ear for regional dialect. And specifically with Fargo, especially the lead character. Mm. So I'll do the synopsis. The synopsis, Jerry Lundegaard hires two inept criminals to kidnap his wife so that his father-in-law would pay a ransom to him, obviously unknown to the father-in-law, and it goes terribly wrong. That's the short version. Mm. And Jerry Lundegaard is a character who's always conning people. He's in debt. He needs to do this kidnapping to make the money that he needs.
I got that wrong then. I called him Wade. Why did I call him Wade?
I think Wade's the father-in-law.
Okay. So yeah, I meant Jerry before.
It's another positive of the Coen brothers too, is that they give their characters such specific names, but then there's too many of them sometimes. But the character of Jerry in this is the perfect example of someone saying something they don't mean, and you can see they don't mean it. And there's a lot of, he'll start a sentence and then he'll stop and change direction because he's trying to catch up on.
Yeah, you can see him sweat as he bullshits. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's some of my favourite dialogue purely because there is the interruption of one person from another, which is it's really hard to write good dialogue, and it's really hard to write, not overlapping, but people interrupting each other. And specifically with this, there's a lot of, I'm doing it right now, where you start to think one thing and you go, oh, actually I should be saying this. I can't think of another film that I've seen, apart from other Coen Brothers films, I can't think of many films that do it as well as this, where it's like, well, you mean, oh, yeah, I could, sure. And there's a lot of stopping and starting.
Yeah, when Jerry introduces himself, he's, I think he says, at the start. He says, I'm Jerry, whatever. And like, yeah, I noticed that from the start. It's, yeah, I think you need to know the rules to break them. And they've just done it really well.
Yeah.
I agree.
Going back to what you said earlier, it's realistic without just copying reality. Because everything they say reveals who they are. Like you saying, he starts with the word says he's uncertain. And the opening scene of, with the dialogue there, it sets up the entire film, but it does it in a way where it's not like the lead character saying, I want you to kidnap my wife. The audience has to catch up. Like, the characters know it, you have to catch up. And that's great writing, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it says everything that he won't just come out and say it. And the amount of, like, apologetic fillers he has, even when he's, like, trying to fuck everyone over, is, yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's a very weak character. Not weak in terms of how he's written, but he's a weak...
moral.
If you met him in real life, he would be somebody you go, oh, he's forgettable, he's very weak, and he's this and that. But that's what drives all of his actions, because he's kind of stepped on all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you noticed as well, like, I mean, I know you've seen this a couple of times at least, but... have you noticed that there's so much precision to the words used in the dialogue? It feels almost improvised because of how well it's done. But if you ever see any, if you watch any behind the scenes to any Coen Brothers film, they explain. So the good example is when, I can't remember his name, but he's one of the inept criminals, Steve Buscemi, and I feel really bad, I've forgotten the actor's
name. The
blonde
guy, yeah.
Yeah, the blonde guy. It's some Norwegian sounding name. And, he says, where is Pancake's house? So the first time they took a take, he went, where is the Pancake house? And they stopped him and went, what are you doing? And he's like, well, there was a typo. It said Pancakes. He's like, no. We wrote that in there because that's how he would say it.
Mm.
There's so much precision to how they write these things and how they direct the actors to say these things. I feel like that's why the Coen Brothers are probably, I'm torn. I don't want to say the best, but they are definitely in the top five, possibly, writer-directors of all time, because... you know when you're in their world because of the precision. And a lot of it is through the dialogue.
And yeah, the dialogue is the one thing I remember most about this film. And like the amount, how many times can you say, yeah, and oh yeah, like different in different ways. It's so...
yeah.
And Margie,
well, that's what I mean.
Main character Margie. I also like that they introduce her quite late. But like, yeah, she's so cute and funny in the way that she speaks. And like the contrast with that to like some murders going on is just like perfect.
Well, yeah, she's the only... pure character in it, in terms of goodness. Like, she's the only one who doesn't do things for reasons other than it's not for herself. Like, she has the best, some of the best lines at the end. I don't want to spoil it, so people should watch it.
She gets the last word, basically.
She's very pure, and that belief almost karmically is like everyone who makes bad decisions, it catches up with them. Whereas with her, she's like, all right, this bad thing's happened, I'm going to try and stop it, I'm going to try and solve it. And I feel like a lot of the drama and the jeopardy comes from the fact that she's so pure and so naive and so sweet. Even the... this is... okay, so we're about to talk about one of my favourite scenes here. When she goes to meet someone from her old school called...
isn't it Mike?
Yeah. His name's Mike, yeah. Mike Yanagita.
That's not a spoiler. That's just hilarious. You can... I feel like you can say it if you want.
Yeah, it's one of my... like, there's one line in it which kills me every time. He basically... this is where she figures out a huge plot point as well. She realises that other people have been lying to her. But the scene itself, you don't know why it's there the first time you watch it. It's very much like, oh, let's have a reunion. I haven't seen you for so long. And she starts to realise that he has intentions that aren't just, let's catch up. And he starts to cry. This is the power of the Coen Brothers, I think, is that they take a scene that's funny and they ramp it up to kind of obscure levels. And he starts to explain why his wife was kind of... She died, and she, you know, he's making it seem like, oh, you need to be sympathetic here. And then he starts to be like, no, I used to really like you. I used to really like you. And one of my favourite lines of any film, just it always makes me laugh, is him going, you're such a super lady. And he's like crying and laughing in this weird way. It's some of the, yeah, I have nothing but praise for this film. And that scene in particular, I quote it with a few friends of mine, like at least once a month, because it's so... One line shouldn't be that funny.
Once a month.
Maybe not every month, but like routinely. There's a few other films that I was considering this week, like Full Metal Jacket or any Kubrick film. there's way too many films we could talk about this week, like Social Network, especially the opening, Chinatown, any Scorsese film, Woody Allen. But yeah, I feel like when dialogue's done really well, like, again, it should be a visual, it's a visual medium, so it should tell everything without saying it. But when it's done really well, dialogue, when it's done really well, it kind of accentuates the quality of what you're seeing. And, you know, even a David Lynch film, like, there's hardly any dialogue in those films because they're like moving paintings. But when someone says a line, it's usually delivered in a kind of an odd way, and it sticks in your brain.
Yeah.
Whether it's a line like Silencio, I won't say what it means, whether it's that or it's someone going, I'm in your house right now. Mm. It's so memorable, and it shouldn't be.
Yeah, I was just going to say, in terms of like almost making dialogue necessary is very clever. Like in Fargo, the dad does he has so little action. He doesn't stand up for himself or do much at all. He's just a talker. He tries to talk his way out of everything. And there's a moment when his son is crying on his bed because his mum's been kidnapped and he doesn't know what's going to happen. And the dad, obviously responsible for it all, just stands at the doorway and says, it's going to be all right. And I think, yeah, and he keeps being like, oh, it's going to be all right. But he doesn't go in, hug the son, do anything human.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just weird, odd ways of saying lines and stuff. Dialogue has to go with action.
It makes it more memorable, but also it says a lot about his character that he doesn't know how to communicate with people, and yet he constantly talks. Like, I don't necessarily think that a character talking too much is a bad thing, so long as what they're saying has purpose. Because, like, I've been avoiding the name, but Tarantino is a name which is synonymous with dialogue and film. I think he used to do it really well, but I think, especially the past two or three films, especially The Hateful Eight, which I'm not a huge fan of, there's so much dialogue which is unnecessary. There's so much going on with people just talk inane. Like the first couple of films, it kind of sets up themes, sets up characters for later in the film, but the past two or three films, there's a lot of just like, just get rid of half an hour of this film and it'll be a better film. Mm-hmm. That's the end of my Tarantino rant, which always often comes up.
I think it's fair. I haven't really paid attention to his dialogue though, but
really.
No, okay. I don't.
What do you notice with his films then? I think we talked about this before, a lot of violence and...
Yeah, a lot of needless violence and using that as the thrill factor. Yeah.
So one thing I want to ask before we finish this is, it's slightly different when you're writing, say, a novel or a short story, but have you found it's hard to write dialogue for characters and it's hard to find a specific style for each person in the past, and have you improved on that, and if so, how?
Yeah, I, which part of the answer question,
sorry, that was a big one.
Yeah, I find it really hard, and unless I know a character inside and out, I find it really hard to make them speak, or sometimes the way they speak comes to me first, but that's very rare.
Well, do you find you write in your own voice sometimes if you're speaking?
Yes, yeah, all the time.
It's really hard, right?
How I speak is written down, which is why some really strong characters, I'm still working on that. I'm working on like things that are longer than just tiny short stories where sometimes I don't even use dialogue, like longer things. They need to have a solid character, and the way that comes out is partly in their speech as well. I've improved a little bit, but purely because I've been so aware of it and trying to work on it when I read as well. Notice that.
Yeah. Do you find, yeah, I don't know if you have the same thing, but when I watched Fargo again, I have this itch to rewrite everything I've ever done, because it's like, it'll never be as good as what they've done here. Like, I feel like everything I've written's been quite broad. I know that, especially with the next film, like, I know that people have different ways of speaking, but I watch what they've done and I start,
yeah. Well, how have you improved your dialogue?
Well, I found a really good tip years ago, which was say it aloud. Like, unless you can say it yourself, you can't expect someone else to do it.
Yeah.
And
I think that's true in terms of prose and stuff of all sentences, because people read in their heads. But yeah, with film dialogue, I get that.
I wouldn't say that my dialogue's got better, but I would say that it's worth knowing that if you say it aloud, like, people send me scripts to edit or just read, especially with students as well. And it's like, have you tried saying this? Like, how do you expect someone to say this? Because people don't talk like simple things like saying it's instead of it is. Like, no one says it is one day today. Like, no one speaks completely perfect. I mean, unless
I stopped writing like that too. I don't write like we don't speak anymore.
I feel like, yeah.
If you get what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, no, I don't mean it's... Yeah, I'm torn about that because, yeah, I don't know, I'm torn.
Weirdly, I was watching Harry Potter last night and this was the first one and some of the lines they've got, they say, I'd say something, something, and I'm like, no kid says that. Yeah. Like, they have really formal words for them.
I have a lot of hate for the Harry Potter films, but...
I know you do, but I don't care. I love him, but...
But it's mostly because of what you've just said, which is that, you know, you're asking a lot of some kids to say these things. Give them a break. Allow them to talk like people actually talk. I'm not talking about the spells or the names of things, but...
Yeah, just you can connect even more with magic kids if they speak like you do.
Yeah,
so, yeah.
That's what I do anyway.
Thank you for listening to The Talkies. This week we were discussing dialogue. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. And don't forget to tune in to next week's episode.